welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm Mark Levenier, your host for an hour of mystery stories. Later on, it's Let George Do It from 1948. But first, a broadcast of True Detective Mysteries, which had a surprisingly long run on radio, heard on air as early as 1929 on CBS, with a great radio run on Mutual from 1944 through 1958, usually heard on Sunday afternoons. This episode from March 8, 1937, called The Rattlesnake and the Barefoot Bride.
Now, The Rattlesnake and the Barefoot Bride, dramatized from True Detective Mysteries magazine.
Our story begins on the night of August 5th, 1935, outside of Los Angeles, California, in the peaceful little community of La Cañada. The summer night is scented with the haunting fragrance of orange blossoms, whose drifting petals somehow seem like falling tears. And that strange sound that seems to float on the air, like the echo of some weird rattle, what is that? We shall see.
Well, here we are. The honeymoon cottage.
Looks like a swell little bungalow, Bob.
Not bad for a barber, huh, Harry? What do you say, Mildred?
Just marvelous, Bob. But it's all dark.
Not a light showing. Say, Bob, maybe Mary's asleep.
Just too bad if she is. We'll wake her up.
Oh, Bob, don't do that. Don't you think Harry and I could come and visit some other time?
Nothing doing. Mildred, I asked you and Harry to come over tonight because, well, Mary hasn't been feeling well lately, and I thought you could cheer her up.
We'll try. I'm so sorry.
Yes, Mary looked grand when I last saw her.
Always does. She's so beautiful with that lovely blonde hair and perfect white skin.
Yeah. Having a 27th birthday party soon. You'll have to come out. Here, up the driveway. Come on. Come right in. I'll turn on the lights.
Why, Bob. Oh, how lovely.
So this is where you keep your bride.
Not bad for a barber, huh? Beautiful home, beautiful wife. Yeah, I'll call her. Mary! Oh, Mary! We got company! Yeah,
that's funny.
Mary! Are you down here? Funny.
Maybe she's upstairs.
I'll run up and see. Mary! Mildred Jackson and Harry North are here. Mary!
Harry, I hope nothing's the matter.
Oh, don't be silly. What could be the matter?
Mary!
This house seems so empty.
Oh, Mary's probably out in the backyard feeding those rabbits of hers Bob was telling us about.
Mary! Mary! She's not up there.
Well, maybe she's visiting neighbors.
Neighbors? Not a chance. She doesn't know any of them. Hey, where are those flashlights?
Flashlights?
Here, Terry. You take this flashlight and I'll take this one. We'll search outside the house.
Search?
Yeah. Bob, do you really think...
Please, let's hurry. Mary hasn't been well lately. I'm afraid she may have had a dizzy spell and fallen down somewhere.
I'm glad now we decided to stay.
Yeah. Harry, you take that flashlight and look out in the front yard. I'll look around out back.
Well, all right. Come on, Mildred. Outside, quick. Here. Now, I'll hold the flashlight. Do you see anything?
No. Oh, only those orange blossoms.
Anything but those flower beds?
No.
Oh, Harry! Is anything out in the front yard?
No, Bob, nothing here.
I'm looking around the rabbit pen. Oh, Harry!
Yes?
Take a look in the side yard, will you?
All right. Come on, Mildred. It sure is dark out here. I certainly needed this flashlight. What's this?
Well, it's a little fish pond with a fountain. A lily pond. Oh, look, it has water lilies in it. They're night blooming.
In full bloom, too. See how they...
Harry, what's that?
Where?
There. There, on the other side of the pool. Here, hold your flashlight. Oh, it's Mary!
Merciful heavens! Bob!
Bob! What's the matter?
Mary! Oh, Mary! Oh, look! Look at her hair around that water lily. Oh!
Oh, Lord! Mary! How did this happen? Oh, my poor little girl.
Steady, Bob, steady.
Mary!
I think I'd better call the police.
What do you think happened, James?
I don't know, Sheriff.
He's not himself yet, Sheriff, but maybe I can help you.
Do you know what happened?
Well, not exactly, Sheriff, but Bob here told us that Mary, his wife, was subject to dizzy spells. Well, I figure she fainted and fell into the pond and then...
Yes, I see. We're going out again to look things over. You two stay here with James.
Yes, sir.
Come on, Jonesy.
Right.
Looks like pretty shallow water for anyone to drown in.
Yeah, it sure does. About 8 inches deep, I figure.
Too bad. Hey, what's this? Turn that flashlight down on her legs. Look at that.
Well, her leg is swollen nearly twice the size of the other one. Was she in an accident or something?
I don't know. Here comes the doctor. We'll ask him what he thinks. Oh, Doc. Doc, here, this way, please.
Oh, hello, Sheriff. Is this the patient?
Too late for being a patient, I guess, Doc. Looks like a drowning.
Rather unusual in a shallow pool like this, isn't it?
Yeah.
Say, Doc, look at that left leg. What do you make of it?
Looks like a bite of some sort.
Do you know what kind?
Well, that's hard to say. It might be some insect like a black widow spider. But I can't say for sure without a chemical analysis.
You take charge of the body until the coroner comes, will you, Doctor?
Yes, I will.
Come on, Jonesy. Let's go inside again.
Right. Feel any better, James? Still too upset, eh? Maybe you can help us, North.
What do you want to know?
Has Mrs. James been in an accident recently?
Well, I really don't know. I didn't hear about any accident.
Say, what's this? Mind if I read this letter? Look at this, Jonesy. Here's your answer.
Dear sis, just a line to let you know I'm pretty sick. My leg is all swollen. Something bit me while watering in the garden. And having lots of bad luck. This is old Blue Monday, but my daddy will be home early tonight, and he takes good care of me. Mary. Bitten by something in the garden, eh? So that's it.
Yep.
Well, you don't need us here now, do you, men? Suppose I take James home with me tonight. He's pretty well shot, and I think a good night's sleep somewhere else would do him good.
That'll be okay, I guess.
Well, come on, Bob and Mildred. We're going now. There, you sit in the back of the car, Bob, and you'll be more comfortable there.
Feel any better, Bob?
No. You know something, Harry?
What?
Too bad Mary had to die that way.
What do you mean?
Well, it's going to look bad for me.
For you? What are you driving at?
My third wife drowned in a bathtub in Colorado about 3 years ago.
Well, what in the world has that got to do with this?
Well, the cops will ask a lot of questions.
And that's what's worrying you now? You sure are a queer duck. You afraid of being questioned. And your wife stone dead. Gee.
You don't understand, Harry.
Well, I guess I don't. Proceed, Joey.
Yes, sir. Here's how we found the body, Inspector. Face down in the pool, head and shoulders submerged, wore thin flowered silk dress, blue boudoir silk slippers, skirt pulled up over knees and legs bare.
Oh, Mary loved to watch the goldfish play in the pond.
There, Bob. Come on now, calm down.
She must have fainted and fallen in the pond.
Mr. James, the law of Los Angeles County has no wish to meddle with a husband's grief. We simply want the facts.
Yes, sir.
Sheriff Joey. Are all your witnesses present?
Yes, Inspector.
All right. Go ahead, Sheriff.
We found this note, Inspector, on the table in the kitchen of the deceased's home.
Let me have it. Now, Mr. James, is this your wife's handwriting?
Yes, sir.
This letter is addressed to Mrs. R. H. Stewart, Las Vegas, Nevada. Do you know her?
Yes, sir. Mrs. Stewart is her sister.
Something bit her while watering in the garden. That would account for the swollen leg. Today is old Blue Monday. My daddy will be home early tonight. Mr. James, you were at the barber shop all day yesterday?
Yes, sir.
How long have you been married to the deceased?
3 months. And say, Inspector, I've been married 5 times altogether. Quite a record for a man only 39, huh?
Mr. James, we're not interested at this time in how many wives you've had. We're investigating the circumstances of this death.
Sure, I thought I'd tell you about the other marriages so you wouldn't think I was holding out on you.
I see.
I'll say this. Mary was the best of the lot. She was a fine girl.
Mr. James, did your wife carry any insurance?
Yes. In a way, I'm sorry she did. That kind of puts me on the spot. You see, I'm the beneficiary.
We're not accusing you of anything. How much insurance did your wife carry?
She had two $5,000 policies that carried double indemnity clauses in case of accidental death.
Insurance, all right. Oh, Dr. Long.
Yes, Inspector.
Dr. Long, are you the James family physician?
I was called in to treat Mrs. James about 7 weeks ago.
Go on, Doctor.
Mrs. James was an expectant mother.
Was Mrs. James subject to fainting spells?
She was quite nervous. I prescribed a mild sedative.
Would you say that in view of the state of her health, she might have fainted and fallen into the pool?
Well, yes, it could have happened. Poor woman.
Mary! Mary!
Oh, don't cry, Bob. Please don't cry.
Mary James was laid to rest in Los Angeles near the third wife of Robert James. The two brides of the strange barber lay side by side in eternal sleep. But the tragic story of Mary was not yet to have its final heart-rending chapter written. For while Robert James once more plied his shears in his barbershop in the office of Buren Fitz, District Attorney of Los Angeles County, the shears of fate were also snipping.
Tui, let's hear that coroner's report again.
Yes, Mr. Fitz. Coroner surgeon's report, Mrs. Mary Bush James came to her death on the night of August the 5th, 1935, as a result of drowning, with acute cellulitis of left foot and left leg following laceration of great left toe as contributing factor. Verdict, accidental drowning, case automatically closed.
All right, Tui. Well, what else have you to suggest, Inspector Southard?
Mr. Fitz, there's about only one thing left to do.
What's that?
I've been doing some scouting around. This fellow James is taking a house out on LaSalle Avenue.
Oh, who's his next-door neighbor?
The house next door is vacant. Now, my idea would be to install a microphone in his house, rent the house next door, and listen in for a while.
That's a good idea. Oh, Sergeant, get me Chief of Police Davis on the phone. I want the best sound man in the department.
Set to a microphone working now?
Yes, sir. One in the bedroom and one in the living room.
Okay, here comes a voice Sester don't expect. Turn it on.
Rotten day at the shop. Customers give me a pain.
Ever since your wife died, you've been complaining day and night.
If you don't like what I say, you know what you can do.
I only wish I could.
Hey, what's the idea? Why don't you send these shirts to the laundry?
Please be quiet, Bob. I'm not your servant. If you want your shirts laundered, why don't you take care of yourself?
Shut up. Don't you ever yell at me that way.
You're riding for a fall, Bob. Don't forget it.
Yeah, it was good enough for you when you didn't know where your next meal was coming from, wasn't it?
I paid you back 20 for everything you ever done for me.
What does she mean?
Shh, quiet.
Don't look at me that way. Don't go away.
Keep quiet. You want to wake up the whole neighborhood?
Oh, please go away. Please.
I'm going over there and break that guy's head down.
Stop whining. I didn't hurt you. Between you and Hope, I'll go nuts.
If he's bothering you, why do you take it out on me?
Bothering me, huh? Hope won't be bothering me for long. Next time he tries to get more dough from me, I'll get him. Only better than I got married.
Did you hear that?
I knew he'd talk.
I saw Hope bring Buick near the barber shop today.
He did? Well, why didn't he come in to see me? I only wish he had. Am I gonna fix him? I should have done it long ago.
I want to know one thing.
What's that?
Isn't that girl a manicurist in James' barbershop?
You're right, Captain. I thought I heard her voice sound familiar.
She testified for him at the coroner's inquest, remember?
Yeah. But where does this guy Hope fit in the picture? He has something on James.
He owns a green Buick. That's all we know, but that's plenty. Come on, let's go.
Right.
Without parallel in the police history of Los Angeles was on. Armed with a complete list of all cars registered in the name of Hope, the law, grim and quiet, checked them one by one. On the morning of May 2nd, Inspector Southard and Tui, acting on a tip, drove up to a lunchroom in Hermosa Beach, where Charlie Hope was employed, and placed him under arrest for the murder of Mary James. While he was being grilled at headquarters, the two officers resumed their vigil at the recording instruments in the house next door to the one occupied by Bob James.
James, is it later than usual tonight?
I wonder if he knows that Hope was picked up today.
No, the DA's office has him undercover.
But Hope didn't crack yet, Captain.
Don't worry, Tuey. With Williams grilling him, it won't be long now.
We take James tonight, eh?
You heard the chief's orders. We've got to get him red-handed. Listen. Here they come now.
Got to have tomorrow's Sunday. I'm tired.
Me too.
What's your hurry? Would you like me anymore?
How could I?
Why shouldn't you? Yeah, come on.
No. Please, please.
What's the matter with you anyway?
No. No.
Come back or I'll...
Hey, Dewey. She's run away from him.
She should have done that a long time ago.
Open that door. I'll break it down. You hear me? Open that door.
Turn off that speaker. Let's pull our raid.
Okay. Are you sure you have the passkey?
Yeah, here it is. Let's go over. This way. Come in. I'll open the door. You walk in fast. Careful. James may have a gun.
James,
we're from headquarters. You're under arrest.
What for?
You'll find out.
You can't get me out of here. I ain't done nothing.
We can, Harry. But how about this?
Put it to him. He'll come all right. You too, sister.
Oh, why did I ever get in this mess? I knew something like this would happen.
Proceed, Mr. Williams.
Charles H. Hope. Take the witness chair again, please.
Charles Hope, I hand you the signed paper. Can you identify it?
Yes, sir, I can.
Tell the court what it is.
It's my confession.
You admit you wrote it?
Yes, sir, I do.
And you signed it?
I did.
Of your own free will?
Yes, sir.
You weren't forced to sign it?
No, sir.
Will you please read it to the jury?
I, Charles H. Hope, for the purpose of...
Just a minute. You may start with the next paragraph, please.
Yes, sir. About a year ago, I was broke. Went to Robert James' barber shop in Los Angeles to see if I could get a free haircut and shave. Oh, now listen, Bob. Give me a free ride in the barber chair. Maybe I can help you someday.
Nobody helps Bob James. Maybe you're the man I'm looking for. Like to make $100?
Boy, I'd jump at that chance.
Uh-huh.
How do I earn this $100?
Yes, huh? A friend of mine says he'll pay $100 for some good live rattlesnakes.
Rattlesnakes?
Yeah, rattlesnakes. Not afraid of mine.
For that money, I ain't afraid of nothing.
Huh? Here's the money. Get me two of the kind of snakes I want and keep the rest of the dough. Come on, we'll take my car. Come on.
Snake Jim?
Yeah, Snake Joe, that's me.
Got any good diamondback rattlesnakes?
What, I got the meanest diamondbacks around here.
Now, look here, mister. Have they got a lot of venom in them?
Venom? Say, that's what Snake Joe's known for. They're what you call hot snakes, full of venom. You hear them rattling down in the pit?
Yeah, I hear them. How about them two big rattlesnakes over there in the corner of the pit? How much would they be?
I'll sell them rattlesnakes to you for 70 cents a pound.
Oh, you sell them by the pound, eh?
Why, sure, that's the only way to sell rattlesnakes.
Okay. I'll take them two big ones.
Yeah? Well, there's my stick and the noose here. Oh, here they are. Come on, Lightning. Come on there, Fork Thumbs. I tell you, brother, them two diamondbacks is the meanest killers in the state of California.
Man, they're wicked. Yeah, I brought this box with a glass top. Put them in here. Say, Fork Thumbs meaner than Lightning.
Yeah, they're plenty hot. Now, let's see. Take off the weight of the box. That's 10.5 pounds of rattlesnake. That's $7.35. Change out of 10. Right, here you are. I'll come again sometime.
Okay. I got the snakes, Bum.
Fine. You sit back there with them. Are they hot ones?
And half. Diamondbacks and plenty hot.
Chuck? There's no third party in this. I want to collect some insurance. You're the only one in it with me.
I don't get you.
No? You'll soon find out. My wife, she's the one.
I don't want to be mixed up in this kind of business.
You'd like to get some real dough, wouldn't you?
kills it?
I thought so. Well, here we are. Let's get out. Did you bring in that box of snakes?
Yeah, over there behind the door.
Daddy, is that you?
Yeah, Mary, I'll be in soon.
Shh,
she's sick.
Boy, I can't figure you out.
You're too dumb. Come on, let's have a drink.
Hey, where are you going with that rope?
Wait a minute, you'll see.
How come adhesive tape? Hey, what are you doing with that?
Shut up. This is going to be done right. You'll see.
I'm so glad you're home. I don't feel well, dear. Please call the doctor.
You won't need a doctor when I'm through with you.
Bob, what do you mean? Please, Bob, don't you understand? I don't feel very well.
Yeah. I'm so sorry, Mary. Come here. Come on.
What do you want, Bob?
Here. Take this pen and write what I tell you.
Well, what do you want me to write? Bob, dear, what's come over you? You look so strange.
Never mind. Just write.
Yes, dear.
Like this. Dear sis, just a line to let you know I'm pretty sick.
Pretty sick?
Yeah. My leg is all swollen.
But, Bob, what do you mean? My leg isn't swollen.
I said right. My leg is all swollen. Something bit me while watering in the garden. Yeah. Having lots of bad luck. This is old Blue Monday, but my daddy will be home early tonight, and he takes good care of me. Sign it, Mary. Now put your darling sister's name and address on this envelope.
All right. Bob, why did you make me write this to Sis?
Turn around and don't talk so much.
What are you doing with that adhesive tape, Bob? Bob, I'm frightened.
Shut up.
Bob, what are you trying to do to me? My mouth!
She moved her eyes, too?
Yeah. Give me that rope. Give it to me. I'm going to tie it to the kitchen table. Hurry up.
Tie it, and she can't see.
Shut up. Where are those rattlesnakes?
There they are, but...
Get them, get them. What are you standing around looking like that for?
All right, I'll get them.
Put them down. Put the box down. Here, by her foot. I'll take the lid off the box. Take it off, I tell you.
But
take it off.
But she's barefooted. She's barefooted.
Oh, don't put a foot in there. Don't. The snake. Look at the line of snake. Ah, shut up.
Hand me that stick. I'll turn up some more. She's fainted.
Now, I can take the snakes back and give them to Snake Joe.
I couldn't stand it in there. Is she dead yet?
Is she dead yet? She's been dead since 4 o'clock. To make double sure, I drowned her in the bathtub. She's finished now, all right. Come in and help me carry her out.
No, I can't.
Come
I can't
on,
do that.
Come on. You take her feet. I'll carry her head. We'll put her in a lily pond. Come on.
And then, after that, he cleaned up the bathroom, and he drove me home.
That's a lie! You did it! You did it! You did it!
Robert S. James, jury having found you guilty of murder in the first degree, I hereby sentence you to be executed according to the law of the state of California at San Quentin Prison at the time prescribed. You are to be hanged by the neck until you are dead.
The story you have just heard is The Rattlesnake and the Barefoot Bride, dramatized from True Detective Mysteries Magazine and electrically transcribed for your pleasure by Transamerican.
True Detective Mysteries on Tuned 2 yesterday, that episode heard on Mutual on the 8th of March, 1937. You are listening to an hour of mystery on Tuned 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for Let George Do It, Bob Bailey, who would popularly be known as yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Several years after this broadcast, stars as Detective George Valentine in the story Friendship Clubs from May 31st, 1948 on Mutual Radio.
Standard of California, on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West, invite you to Let George Do It.
Another adventure of George Valentine.
Personal notice. Danger is my stock and trade. If it's something you can't handle and it must remain strictly confidential, you got a job for me, George Valentine. Write full details.
Dear Mr. Valentine, I've worked very hard to get what I want out of life. A successful marriage. A husband who's highly respected in the community. Everything. Now, by one of her foolish whims, my own sister threatens to destroy all that. She's been missing for 2 days and must be found without any publicity. That's why I'm calling on you.
Calling on you instead of the police. Phone me this afternoon when my husband is sure not to be here. Tuxedo Lake, 673. I'll be at your office anytime you say. Signed, Edith Wilder.
Tuxedo Lake, huh? Uh-huh. That little body of water has become very fashionable lately.
Well, I don't want to sound grasping, George, but if the Wilders live on the exclusive island in Tuxedo Lake...
Yeah, I know, Brooksy. The fee could be a thing of beauty. All right, call Mrs. Wilder for an appointment at the office tomorrow morning.
After thinking it over, Mr. Valentine, I decided to bring Angela's husband with me.
Oh, Edith, you shouldn't have hired this man's services. Angela is free to do anything she chooses now.
Leave this to me, Walter. This is my sister's husband, Mr. Philiston.
Mr. Philiston?
How do you do?
My assistant, Miss Brooks.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Do you mind if she takes some notes? So far, I'm in the dark about this whole thing.
Anytime you're ready.
It'll take just a few not very pleasant words. Angela's disappeared again. This time, there's every reason to believe it'll cause a scandal none of us will ever live down.
Oh, Edith.
Mrs. Wilder, just how old is your sister?
Well, she's 2 years younger than I am, 42. You'll get all the information you need, and I'm sure you'll know just how to proceed.
You may as well tell him the whole truth, Edith, as long as you've gone this far.
Walt,
do you want me to put all this down, George?
No, no, Brooksy, I think we'll get to the point right now. Look, Mrs. Wilder, what about the whole truth?
Oh, I wanted to avoid that.
You see, Mr. Valentine, I'm Angela's third husband.
Take it down from here, Brooksy.
Right, George.
The third man she's married through a matrimonial agency.
And now corresponding with another man before she's even divorced from Walter.
Oh, I see.
No matter what happens, this must never come out. You don't know how people are out at Tuxedo Lake. Even if my own husband found this out...
When I put the word confidential in my ad, Mrs. Wilder, I meant it. Now, Mr. Philiston... Are you sure your wife was corresponding with another man?
Yes, I found a letter from him and his picture in a bureau drawer. I tore it up right in front of her face and threw it in the fire.
Well, that wasn't very smart. It might have helped you get a divorce without paying through the nose.
Oh, I realize that now.
What do you mean by that?
Well, last Monday, I had lunch with Angela. She said she'd settle for $20,000 in cash in our house on Tuxedo Island.
And you mean you just shelled out $20,000 like that?
Yes, that same afternoon. It seemed the easiest way. She threatened to sue me for desertion if I left her and take all the money I have if she took me to court and tied up my contracts. And oh, I'm a builder, you know, and it would cost me much more than that.
I just want you to bring Angela back here before she causes a scandal that will wreck all our lives.
Mr. Philiston, would you recognize the man in that picture if you ever saw him?
I can't be sure. I suppose so. I was so upset I don't even remember the name, if there was one.
George, don't you think we ought to get the name of that marriage club?
I ought to know that. That's the way I met her. It's the Selby Friendship Club. Meet your companion for life.
The important thing is this, Mr. Valentine. Walter is staying with me and my husband on the island. So far, we only told Richard that Angela is off visiting some friends. It must remain that way.
Okay, I'll do my best. You'd better give me the keys to your place, Philiston. Maybe I can pick up a lead there.
Here you are. That's that. When a woman is just over 40, well over 60...
Oh, this is no time for you to feel sorry for yourself, Walter.
Hey, Brooksy, take these keys. I'll meet you on the landing at Tuxedo Lake in a couple of hours. Then we'll go over to Mr. Philiston's house.
Okay, George.
Well, what are you going to do, Mr. Valentine?
Pay a visit to the Selby Friendship Club. See what I can find out about Angela's unknown suitor. Now, Mr. Selby, I'm afraid I'm not mistaken.
I can't believe it, Mr. Valentine. Not Angela Kramer Holloway, Philiston.
Amazing how you remember the names of all her husbands. But, of course, you've been providing her with them for years.
Young man, I don't like your cynical tone.
So sorry. I guess I got out of the wrong side of the bed this morning.
The Friendship Club serves a very definite purpose.
Yeah, I know.
Bring together people with identical interests has proven much more successful than aimless courtships and haphazard romances. Our motto is meet your companion for life.
Such as Mrs. Angela Kramer Holloway Philiston.
Of course, there are exceptions,
all right,
but
let's skip the spiel, Cupid. It stands to reason that if Angela got the romantic urge again, she'd patronize the Friendship Club, which gave us such excellent service in the past.
Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you, sir. I know of no correspondence between Mrs. Philiston and any of my clients.
You sure about that?
In fact, Mr. Valentine, I tore up Angela's card in our files. After a year, I assume she was blissfully united with that nice elderly Mr. Philiston.
Well, don't get a nervous breakdown, friend. You can always type another card. Now, look, you put out a bulletin, don't you? Listing the different eager beavers bent on matrimony?
Yes, indeed. Once every month.
Well, if I could get a hold of your latest bulletin, maybe Mr. Philiston could spot the man he saw in that letter.
Unfortunately, the new bulletin won't be off the press at the Bixby Printers for another week. Then I shall be glad to let you see one.
Thanks a lot.
Oh, don't mention it. But if you think I'm just one of those fly-by-night marriage bureaus, you're sadly mistaken. I've spent 30 years bringing together people who thought they didn't have a soulmate in the
Goodbye,
world.
Goodbye, Mr. Selby.
Well, George, looks as though this trip to Philiston's house wasn't worth the boat ride across the lake.
Yeah, Angel. Everything neat as a pin inside there. Not a sign of violence anywhere.
Well, we don't have much to work on, do we?
Well, I thought I could get something out of Selby. That was a complete washout.
Well, George.
Yeah, Brooksy?
May I say something? I mean, as a woman.
I wouldn't have you say it any other way.
Oh. Well, did you notice Mrs. Philiston's closets?
Like any other woman's? Why?
Stuffed to overflowing with furs, lined with dozens of dresses and racks of shoes.
Look, this is no time to comment on feminine extravagance, Angel.
Yeah, but how about feminine psychology?
Huh?
Well, members of our sex just don't leave all those frills and fripperies behind, especially when we're supposed to be running off with another man.
Yeah. Hey, wait a minute, Brooksy. You got something.
Mm-hmm.
Look, get to a phone.
Okay, I saw one in the living room.
Call the Wilders. If Edith doesn't want to walk over here, ask her for a quick inventory of her sister's things.
Of course. She'll know if Angela took anything with her.
How do you like that? She can't just be missing. Nothing
ever is, my friend.
Hey, where did you come from?
Who are you, one of Angela's friends? It's hard to tell. Sometimes they're young, sometimes they're old.
What have you got to do with Angela?
Oh, nothing. I'm just her son.
Son?
So you see, I speak with authority. Can I get you a drink?
Well, if you're her son, aren't you at all concerned about what's happened to her since Monday?
I haven't been able to sleep one single night.
Now, that's obvious.
I have the greatest admiration for my mother and her assorted husbands. I'm Bud Kramer. I spring from Mama's number one marriage club bargain. Are you going to be the fourth, Papa?
The name's Valentine. I'm here to see if I can find your mother.
Get out.
Hey, now, wait a minute.
I said get out! If you never find her, it'll be the best break I ever got. This house will belong to me, and I'll come into some money.
If you don't stop sticking your chin in my face, son, I'm going to have to do something about it.
Oh, it's fine to have a mother you can respect. You know, you can always help her with her letters when she decides it's time for another husband. Well, didn't you hear me? Get out of here!
Let's not be a problem, huh?
Let go of my arm.
You'd better go upstairs and go to bed. You've had a busy night, and you've been getting around today, too. Go on, sleep it off.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll sing myself to sleep with Brahms' lullaby. Or maybe I'll make it Mother McCree. Be sure to find my mother, will you? Tell her how much a little boy needs her.
George, who was that? What did he mean?
We'll get to him later. What did Edith say?
Well, it's the strangest thing, darling.
Yeah, what is?
Edith says apparently Angela didn't take a stitch of clothing with her. And you know that blue plaid dress hanging over the chair in her bedroom?
Yeah, I saw it.
Well, Walter said that was the one she wore the day he gave her the $20,000 and she disappeared.
With a towel around her or a bathing suit? Oh, no, Brooksy, this doesn't whack up at all.
Yeah, I know.
It's beginning to look more like something for homicide, not missing persons.
Well, Lieutenant Riley is just going to love us when we present him with this case.
Well, of course, we're not sure yet. Brooksy, I'm going to take one more stab at keeping this confidential.
Meaning?
A visit to Bixby Printers. I'd like to get a preview of next month's bulletin of the Friendship Club. I know Selby's bulletin hasn't come out yet, Mr. Bixby, but could I take a look at the advance proofs?
Well, I suppose I could do that for you. They're right over here.
Oh, we'll have them back in the morning. We just want someone to take a look at.
I take it, Mr. Valentine, you're from the police.
Well, let's just say I'm working with the police.
Well, okay, just so long I don't lose any time on the job. Yeah, they're right here in this file. I just had them out a couple hours ago. Selby called up and wanted something ripped out before he went to press.
Oh. George, that would be after you talked to him.
Yeah, I know. Look, Bixby, have you got that part Selby wanted left out?
Was there a picture of a man in it?
No, as I remember it, it was a listing of a lady. She must have changed her mind. Happens all the time. Sent the picture back to Mr. Selby by messenger. But here's the copy that went with it, if you want to see it.
Yeah. Friendship Club member number 40. Young, attractive divorcee. Amiable, fun-loving, anxious to live life to the fullest. Major interests, good books, cooking, and so forth and so on.
Well, that's a dead end.
Yeah. All right, Mr. Bixby, we'll have these back to you in the morning first thing. Let's get back, Brooksy.
You know, I'm beginning to feel like a Tuxedo Lake commuter. To be exclusive, George, but I'd hate to make this trip to the island every time I came home late.
Yeah, it is kind of dark, Angel. But that green light way up ahead, that's the Philistin dock.
Say, what happens if Mr. Philistin doesn't recognize any of these Romeos in the bulletin as Angela's boyfriend?
Well, suspecting what we do, Brooksy, we'll just have to dump the case in Lieutenant Riley's lap tomorrow morning.
We won't be giving him much to work on, except our suspicions.
And the fact that when a woman walks around with $20,000 in cash, she just naturally... Hey, Brooksy, that motorboat coming toward us.
Well, they can see us. They've got their searchlight right on us.
Well, I can't see a thing with that glare.
Turn, George, turn. They're coming right at us.
I'm trying. What's the matter with you? Move. Can't you see it? Brooksy!
Small outboard motorboat heading toward the island in Tuxedo Lake. Suddenly, out of the darkness roars a powerful motorboat, its searchlight blinding George and Claire. A sudden, terrifying crash as the boat upsets, leaving its shaken occupants to struggle ashore. And now, a few minutes later, in front of the fireplace in the Philistin home, George and Claire are trying to puzzle out just what they might have stumbled on in this strange case of Angela Philistin. Angela, still married, but corresponding with a matrimonial club, and now missing for days.
Oh, George, this fire feels wonderful.
Yeah, it sure does. Well, there's one thing sure. Whoever just tried to feed us to the fish is right here on Tuxedo Lake.
Yeah, but what is it we know that we don't know we know?
Oh, Brooksy, at this point, I don't know from nothing. The three people who might possibly want us out of the way are right here on this island. Bud Kramer, Angela's son, who hates his own mother.
Mr. Philistin, who got such a raw deal from Angela, the one and only time he used the services of the Friendship Club.
Yeah, that's right. And Sister Edith, who said she'd do anything to keep a breath of scandal from the swank shores of Tuxedo Island.
All this doesn't exactly give you a comfortable feeling, does it?
Brooksy, before we see Lieutenant Riley in the morning, we're going to check every boat tied up around this lake. Hey, come here, Brooksy.
Huh? George, the Philistin boat.
Yeah, the Angela. Tied up right here in front of the house, as innocent as you please. And look at this big dent right here on her nose. All the paint scraped off.
Well, it looks more and more like it has to be one of those three.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, what the?
There's somebody out there in the lake, George.
Oh, what a night. Just hope whoever was using this boat tonight left the keys in it.
Valentine, I've told you. I went into the village to celebrate.
Sounds phony to me, Bud.
What have you got to celebrate with your mother missing?
Well, that's what I was celebrating.
Let's skip that routine.
I was feeling pretty good, so I thought I'd swim across the lake.
Clothes and all?
Seemed like a good idea at the time. Suddenly, I had to prove to myself that I was a reasonable facsimile of a man.
Yeah.
Guess I'm not in very good shape.
How about this version, Bud? You tied up the Angela after you plowed into us, and you were swimming away from the island toward the shore.
Then you'd be in the clear.
I don't know what you two are talking about.
We'll see about that later. Now, you go upstairs to your room and stay there.
Look, you can't order me around.
I said go to your room.
Yeah, go to your room, buddy. When I was a kid, whenever I was in the way, Angela would say, go to your room, buddy. My adoring mother. Fun-loving. Anxious to live life to the fullest. Oh, where's my wandering mother tonight?
I can't help feeling sorry for that boy, George.
To tell you the truth, I wasn't listening to him very hard.
What?
These red flagstones in front of the fireplace.
Yeah, what about them?
Red stains on red flagstones wouldn't show up very clearly ordinarily. But the light of the fire brings them out.
Huh?
Look at him, Brooksy.
Is that blood?
Could be. This might be the sign of violence we didn't find when we went over this place before.
Well, if you're right, Lieutenant Riley will certainly have something to work on when we come back here in the morning.
And if I'm right, Brooksy, it means Angela Philiston was murdered. All right, Valentine. Where are these bloodstains you dragged me out here to see?
But George, they're gone.
Wait a minute. What is this? Someone scrubbed these flagstones clean during the night.
You don't say.
Oh, what a metal midget I turned out to be. I should have stayed right here while you went back to town, Brooksy.
But how could anybody know what we found?
Oh, well, at least I'm bright enough to know the answer to that one. Somebody knew every move we made last night.
Ah! Stop sounding like a bee picture. Next, you'll be talking about trap doors and hidden passages.
Oh, that's not fair, Lieutenant Riley.
I get dragged out of bed. I bring the best men in the department out here with me. They dredge the lake, and all they're coming up with is some undernourished trout.
All right, Riley. Give me a chance to think, will you?
Hayes here. Look at him. One of the best men in our lab, crawling around on his knees like a charwoman looking for something that isn't here.
I'll be through here in a minute, Lieutenant.
Oh, I can't thank you enough for that bracing, invigorating trip across the lake, Valentine, but I've got better things to do with my time!
Lieutenant, somebody tried to run us down on the lake last night, and he was using Philiston's boat.
Yeah.
Oh, Lieutenant.
Yeah, what is it, Hayes?
These red particles between the cracks in the floor here. They might mean something.
All right, be careful with those, Hayes. Very careful.
Got them in this bottle. You want to initial the label, Lieutenant, in case we ever need it for evidence?
Yeah, sure. But just remember this, Valentine. If this proves to be ketchup from a weenie roast they had in this fireplace, I'll... So help me, I'll do it!
What do you say we wait and see, Lieutenant? It may not be ketchup at all. Just barbecue sauce. The kind that's too hot to handle.
Well, Valentine was right. It was blood, all right. Human blood.
Angela's? I don't understand. Who'd want to kill her?
Oh, I can't believe it.
We found it's the same blood type as your sister's, Mrs. Wilder.
Oh, no. No.
Now, that's not going to help at all, Mrs. Wilder.
Oh, I know I may have sounded selfish and petty. Just thinking of the scandal Angela might cause, but now that it looks as though my sister was murdered, none of that matters.
All right, folks, all right. Let's settle down and do some straight talking, huh? Mr. Philiston.
Yes, Lieutenant.
Well, this is the way it shapes up. Your wife never left the island. If she did, she was carried out after she was murdered in front of that fireplace. And we'll find the body if we have to dig up every inch around Tuxedo Lake.
Lieutenant, I admit I wanted to hate Angela when I found out what she was doing. But I'll give everything I own to find the man who killed her.
Mr. Valentine, you were trying to track down the man Angela was corresponding with. What did you find out at that friendship club?
I did have some pictures for Mr. Philiston to identify. But they're all at the bottom of the lake now.
Yes, very convenient.
About the $20,000, Mr. Philiston, that you were supposed to have given your wife.
No, what about it?
We checked into all of your accounts. There's no record of any withdrawal like that.
Well, I took that money out of a safe deposit box.
Well, that's not where most people keep that much money, is it, Mr. Philiston?
Oh, no, but being in the building game, it pays to be able to put your hands on ready cash.
All right, that's your story.
Oh, I know what you're thinking, but you're wrong. Maybe it was foolish to resort to a marriage club, but I was lonely. I'm
She never brought me any happiness, but I never heard Angela.
Well, we're going to stay right here at headquarters because we got a lot of things to talk about.
I'm still checking on Bud Kramer's story. All he does is prattle about his amiable, fun-loving mother.
Oh, he's still at it, huh? Look, Brooksy.
Yes, George.
You stick right here. Lieutenant, you don't mind if I duck out for a few minutes, do you?
Oh, I won't waste time asking you why.
Oh, but I'll tell you. There's a little angle to this case I overlooked, but I'm going to take care of it right now. Come on, Selby, give. You were holding out on me before, weren't you?
Well, I answered all of your questions to the best of my knowledge.
You mean you just told me as much as you thought I should know. But now you got to open up, Selby. This is a murder case, and the police are in on it.
Oh, dear.
Well, come on, give.
All right. You understand, I had to think of my business, what it might sound like if Angela's disappearance ever got into the papers. You know.
Never mind that, Cupid. Get to the point.
Yes, of course. I suppose I should have told you that Angela was the second wife of Walter Phillison met through the Friendship Club.
Well, surprise.
That's the truth.
Some names, Selby, some facts.
Well, the name of Phillison's first wife was Frieda Merritt. She was a widow, pretty well off.
Yeah?
They were married 5 years ago, and then she...
Then what?
She was out alone fishing about 2 years ago. Her boat turned over, and she was drowned. But it was an accident, Mr. Valentine. The police said it was.
Uh-huh. Better get your hat, Selby.
Why, where are we going?
Police headquarters. I want you to repeat that story to Lieutenant Riley. I think we found the answer to just what's been happening over there on Tuxedo Island.
Well, thanks, Mr. Selby. Now, what about this, Phillistin?
I suppose I should have known this would have come out anyway.
Why didn't you tell us before that you got your first wife through Selby's Friendship Club?
Yes, you made us believe you were just a lonely man. And that was the first time you ever did anything like that.
Does any man ever want to admit that he was played for a fool twice?
What's that supposed to mean?
Frieda and I weren't too happy after a while.
And she died. Well, believe me, we're going to check into that accident, and much more thoroughly this time, now that we know what we're looking for.
That was an accident.
And what about Angela?
Oh, I don't know what happened to Angela after I gave her the $20,000.
Of which we find no record.
I'm sorry, Mr. Phillistin, but I had to tell them what I knew.
Oh, leave me alone.
Oh, I do hope there'll be as little mention of the Friendship Club as possible in this affair.
Is that all you've got to worry about, Mr. Selby?
Of course, Miss Brooks. I've spent years and years building
up... Okay, Selby, okay. You can beat it now. We'll call you when we need you.
Yes, Lieutenant. Of course.
Just a minute, Lieutenant.
Huh?
Is it your usual practice to let a murderer walk out of your office?
What are you talking about?
You mean Selby?
What kind of a joke is this supposed to be? I told you all I knew.
Let me in on this, Valentine.
Me too.
I'd certainly like to know what you're talking about.
You had me on the hook for a long time, Selby, until I started remembering a few things.
Lieutenant, he doesn't know what he's saying.
Well, suppose we listen anyway.
And stop squirming, Mr. Lonely Hearts. You can't talk your way out of this. It's there in black and white.
Please, Mr. Valentine, tell us what you know.
When I first walked into your office, Selby, you said you thought Mrs. Phillistin was happily married.
Well, yes.
You said you even took a card out of the file and tore it up.
That's right.
But then why did you have her name listed in your new bulletin as a likely marriage prospect?
That's a lie.
Friendship Club member number 40, young, attractive divorcee, amiable, fun-loving, anxious to live life to the fullest.
Of course. That was a description of Angela. We never thought of it because we were looking for a man.
Those are the same words her son keeps repeating like a drunken parrot.
Words he could never forget because they were the ones Angela always used when she was looking for a new husband.
That's the same way she described herself in the ad I answered.
Lieutenant, you don't believe...
Save it, Cupid. You just ran your business too well. And that's what's going to hang you.
George, I still don't understand what reason Selby had for killing Angela.
Because Cupid got double-crossed, Angel.
Double-crossed?
Yep. According to Riley, Selby had quite a little racket on the side. Like Angela, for instance.
Oh?
He saw she was getting restless with a man so much older than herself.
I see. So why not get a nice fat settlement from the old boy? The Friendship Club can always come up with a new husband.
They would have split that $20,000, Brooksy. But when she said, no go, and if you do anything about it, I'll go to the police, he killed her and buried her body.
Hmm. Selby didn't miss a trick, did he? Even to using Philiston's boat to run us down.
Well, he knew what the police would think when they learned about how he married the first Mrs. Philiston and how she died. Which, by the way, was an accident.
Oh, darling, I'm so glad.
Hmm?
That we met in a nice, normal way.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. A USO canteen. Yeah, I remember. You were one of the hostesses.
Yeah. Yeah.
You walked up and said demurely, "What about it, soldier? Dance?"
Oh, yes. Wasn't it beautiful?
Yeah. And then I said,
And that was that. After all, no girl could resist such a pretty compliment.
Next week, when you tune our way for another adventure of George Valentine, you'll hear...
Oh, Mr. Dimmick, what was that?
One of the many voices of darkness that echo through the tunnel of love.
Hey, now, calm yourself, Claire.
What's that up ahead?
Yeah, what is that dim light, Dimmick? Seems to be coming from the wall of the tunnel.
It looks like a man. Maybe he's in trouble. You better hurry.
Patience. We can travel only as fast as the water flows through the tunnel. It's like fate, carrying it.
That man's got a gun in his hand.
And pointed right at us. Down on the boat, everybody. That guy means business.
Listen again next week, same time, same station, to Let George Do It.
Let George Do It, on Tuned to Yesterday from May 31st, 1948 on Mutual, bringing to a close this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.